They started back down between the pillars. Blind stone eyes seemed to follow them as they passed. The king kept his arm around Ned's shoulder. "You must have wondered why I finally came north to Winterfell after so long." Ned had his suspicions, but he did not give them voice. "For the joy of my company, surely," he said lightly. "And there is the wall. You need to see it, Your Grace, to walk along its battlements and talk to those who man it. The Night's Watch is a shadow of what it once was. Benjen says—"
"No doubt I will hear what your brother says soon enough," Robert said. "The wall has stood for what? 8,000 years? It can keep a few days more. I have more pressing concerns. These are difficult times. I need good men about me. Men like John Aaron. He served the Lord of the Eyrie, as Warden of the East, as the Hand of the King. He will not be easy to replace."
"His son," Ned began, "his son will succeed to the Eyrie and all its incomes," Robert said brusquely. "No more." That took Ned by surprise. He stopped, startled, and turned to look at his king. The words came unbidden. "The Aarons have always been Wardens of the East. The title goes with the domain."
"Perhaps when he comes of age, the honour can be restored to him," Robert said. "I have this year to think of, and next. A six-year-old boy is no war leader, Ned."
"In peace, the title is only an honour. Let the boy keep it, for his father's sake, if not his own. Surely you owe John that much for his service." The king was not pleased. He took his arm from around Ned's shoulders.
"John's service was a duty he owed his liege lord. I'm not ungrateful, Ned. You of all men ought to know that. But the son is not the father. A mere boy cannot hold the East."
Then his tone softened.
"Enough of this. There is more important office to discuss, and I would not argue with you."
Robert grasped Ned by the elbow.
"I have need of you, Ned."
"I am yours to command, Your Grace, always." They were words he had to say, and so he said them, apprehensive about what might come next. Robert scarcely seemed to hear him.
"Those years we spent in the Eyrie, gods, they were good years. I want you at my side again, Ned. I want you down in King's Landing, not up here at the end of the world, where you're no damn use to anybody."
Robert looked into the darkness, for a moment as melancholy as a stark.
"I swear to you, sitting a throne is 1,000 times harder than winning one. Law's a tedious business, and counting copies is worse, and the people, there's no end of 'em. I sit on that damnable iron chair and listen to them complain until my mind is numb and my ass is raw. They all want something, money or land or justice. The lies they tell, and my lord and ladies are no better. I'm surrounded by flatterers and fools. It can drive a man to madness, Ned. Half of them don't dare tell me the truth, and the other half can't find it. There are nights I wish we had lost at the Trident. No, not truly, but—"
"I understand," Ned said softly. Robert looked at him.
"I think you do. If so, you're the only one, my old friend." He smiled. "Lord Eddard Stark, I would name you the Hand of the King."
Ned dropped to one knee. The offer did not surprise him. What other reason could Robert have for coming so far? The Hand of the King was the second most powerful man in the Seven Kingdoms. He spoke with the king's voice, commanded the king's armies, drafted the king's laws. At times he even sat upon the Iron Throne to dispense king's justice, when the king was absent or sick or otherwise indisposed. Robert was offering him a responsibility as large as the realm itself. It was the last thing in the world he wanted. "Your Grace," he said, "I am not worthy of the honour." Robert groaned with good-humoured impatience.
"If I wanted to honour you, I'd let you retire. I'm planning to make you run the kingdom, and fight the wars while I eat and drink and wench myself into an early grave." He slapped his gut and grinned. "You know the saying about the king and his hand?"
Ned knew the saying. "What the king dreams," he said, "the hand builds."
I bedded a fish maid once, who told me that the low-born have a choice way to put it. The king eats, they say, and the hand takes the shit. He threw back his head and roared with laughter. The echoes rang through the darkness, and all around them the dead of Winterfell seemed to watch with cold and disapproving eyes. Finally, the laughter dwindled and stopped. Ned was still on one knee, his eyes upraised. "Damn it, Ned," the king complained. "You might at least humour me with a smile." They say it grows so cold up here in winter that a man's laughter freezes in his throat and chokes him to death, Ned said evenly. Perhaps that is why the Starks have so little humour. "Come south with me, and I'll teach you how to laugh again," the king promised. "You help me win this damnable throne, now help me hold it. We were meant to rule together. If Lyanna had lived, we should have been brothers, bound by blood as well as affection. Well, it is not too late. I have a son, you have a daughter, eh? My Joff and your Sansa shall join our houses, as Lyanna and I might once have done." This offer did surprise him. Sansa is only 11. Robert waved an impatient hand. "Old enough for betrothal. The marriage can wait a few years," the king smiled. "Now stand up and say yes, curse you."
"Nothing would give me greater pleasure, your grace," Ned answered. He hesitated. "These honours are also unexpected. May I have some time to consider? I need to tell my wife."
"Yes, yes, of course. Tell Catelyn. Sleep on it if you must."
The king reached down, clasped Ned by the hand, and pulled him roughly to his feet.
"Just don't keep me waiting too long. I'm not the most patient of men."
For a moment, Eddard Stark was filled with a terrible sense of foreboding. This was his place, here in the north. He looked at the stone figures all around him, breathed deep in the chill silence of the crypt. He could feel the eyes of the dead. They were all listening, he knew. And winter was coming. John. There were times, not many, but a few, when John Snow was glad he was a bastard. As he filled his wine cup once more from a passing flagon, it struck him that this might be one of them. He settled back in his place on the bench among the younger squires and drank. The sweet, fruity taste of summer wine filled his mouth and brought a smile to his lips. The great hall of Winterfell was hazy with smoke and heavy with the smell of roasted meat and fresh-baked bread. Its grey stone walls were draped with banners, white, gold, crimson, the Direwolf of Stark, Baratheon's crowned stag, the Lion of Lannister. A singer was playing the high harp and reciting a ballad, but down at this end of the hall his voice could scarcely be heard above the roar of the fire, the clangor of pewter plates and cups, and the low mutter of 100 drunken conversations. It was the fourth hour of the welcoming feast laid for the king. John's brothers and sisters had been seated with the royal children beneath the raised platform where Lord and Lady Stark hosted the king and queen. In honour of the occasion, his lord father would doubtless permit each child a glass of wine, but no more than that. Down here on the benches, there was no one to stop John drinking as much as he had a thirst for. And he was finding that he had a man's thirst, to the raucous delight of the youths around him, who urged him on every time he drained a glass. They were fine company, and John relished the stories they were telling, tales of battle and bedding and the hunt. He was certain that his companions were more entertaining than the king's offspring. He had sated his curiosity about the visitors when they had made their entrance. The procession had passed not a foot from the place he had been given on the bench, and John had gotten a good, long look at them all. His lord father had come first, escorting the queen. She was as beautiful as men said. A jewel tiara gleamed amidst her long golden hair, its emeralds a perfect match for the green of her eyes. His father helped her up the steps to the dais and led her to her seat. But the queen never so much as looked at him. Even at 14, John could see through her smile. Next had come King Robert himself,
with Lady Stark in his arm. The king was a great disappointment to John. His father had talked of him often, the peerless Robert Baratheon, demon of the trident, the fiercest warrior of the realm, a giant among princes. John saw only a fat man, red-faced under his beard, sweating through his silks. He walked like a man half in his cups. After them came the children. Little Rickon first, managing the long walk with all the dignity a three-year-old could muster. John had to urge him on when he stopped to visit. Close behind came Rob, in grey wool trimmed with white, the Stark colours. He had the Princess Marcella on his arm. She was a wisp of a girl, not quite 8, her hair a cascade of golden curls under a jewelled net. John noticed the shy look she gave Rob as they passed between the tables, and the timid way she smiled at him. He decided she was insipid. Rob didn't even have the sense to realize how stupid she was. He was grinning like a fool. His half-sisters escorted the royal princes. Arya was paired with plump young Tommen, whose white blonde hair was longer than hers. Sansa, 2 years older, drew the crown prince, Joffrey Baratheon. He was 12, younger than John or Rob, but taller than either, to John's vast dismay. Prince Joffrey had his sister's hair and his mother's deep green eyes. A thick tangle of blonde curls dripped down past his golden choker and high velvet collar. Sansa looked radiant as she walked beside him. But John did not like Joffrey's pouty lips, or the bored, disdainful way he looked at Winterfell's great hall. He was more interested in the pair that came behind him, the Queen's brothers, the Lannisters of Casterly Rock. The Lion and the Imp. There was no mistaking which was which. Sir Jaime Lannister was twin to Queen Cersei, tall and golden, with flashing green eyes and a smile that cut like a knife. He wore crimson silk, high black boots, a black satin cloak. On the breast of his tunic, the lion of his house was embroidered in gold thread, roaring its defiance. They called him the Lion of Lannister to his face, and whispered, "Kingslayer," behind his back. John found it hard to look away from him. "This is what a king should look like," he thought to himself as the man passed. Then he saw the other one, waddling along, half hidden by his brother's side. Tyrion Lannister, the youngest of Lord Tywin's brood, and by far the ugliest. All that the guards had given to Cersei and Jaime, they had denied Tyrion. He was a dwarf, half his brother's height, struggling to keep pace on stunted legs. His head was too large for his body, with a brute squashed in face beneath a swollen shelf of brow. One green eye and one black one peered from under a lank fall of hair so blonde it seemed white. John watched him with fascination. The last of the High Lords to enter were his uncle, Benjen Stark of the Night's Watch, and his father's ward, young Theon Greyjoy. Benjen gave John a warm smile as he went by. Theon ignored him utterly, but there was nothing new in that. After all had been seated, toasts were made. Thanks were given and returned, and then the feasting began. John had started drinking then, and he had not stopped. Something rubbed against his leg beneath the table. John saw red eyes staring up at him. "Hungry again?" he asked. There was still half a honeyed chicken in the center of the table. John reached out to tear off a leg. Then he had a better idea. He knifed the bird whole and let the carcass slide to the floor between his legs. Ghost ripped into it in savage silence. His brothers and sisters had not been permitted to bring the old wolves to the banquet. But there were more curs than John could count at this end of the hall. And no one had said a word about his pup. He told himself he was fortunate in that too. His eyes stung. John rubbed at them savagely, cursing the smoke. He swallowed another gulp of wine and watched his dire wolf devour the chicken. Dogs moved between the tables, trailing after the serving girls. One of them, a black mongrel bitch with long yellow eyes, caught a scent of the chicken. She stopped and edged under the bench to get a share. John watched the confrontation. The bitch growled low in her throat and moved closer. Ghost looked up, silent, and fixed the dog with those hot red eyes. The bitch snapped an angry challenge. She was three times the size of the dire wolf pup. Ghost did not move. He stood over his prize and opened his mouth, baring his fangs. The bitch tensed, barked again, then thought better of this fight. She turned and slunk away, with one last defiant snap to save her pride. Ghost went back to his meal. John grinned and reached under the table to ruffle the shaggy white fur. The direwolf looked up at him, nipped gently at his hand, then went back to eating. "Is this one of the direwolves I've heard so much about?" a familiar voice asked close at hand. John looked up happily as his Uncle Ben put a hand on his head and ruffled his hair, much as John had ruffled the wolf's. "Yes," he said, "his name is Ghost." One of the squaws interrupted the bawdy story he'd been telling to make room at the table for their lord's brother. Benjamin Stark straddled the bench with long legs and took the wine cup out of John's hand. "Summer wine," he said after a taste. "Nothing so sweet. How many cups have you had, John?" John smiled. Ben Stark laughed. "As I feared. Well, I believe I was younger than you the first time I got truly and sincerely drunk." He snagged a roasted onion, dripping brown with gravy, from a nearby trencher, and bit into it. It crunched. His uncle was sharp-featured and gaunt as a mountain crag, but there was always a hint of laughter in his blue-gray eyes. He dressed in black, as befitted a man of the night's watch. Tonight it was rich black velvet, with high leather boots and a wide belt with a silver buckle. A heavy silver chain was looped round his neck. Benjamin watched Ghost with amusement as he ate his onion. "A very quiet wolf," he observed. "He's not like the others," John said. "He never makes a sound. That's why I named him Ghost. That, and because he's white. The others are all dark, grey or black. There are still dire wolves beyond the wall. We hear them on our rangings." Benjamin Stark gave John a long look. "Don't you usually eat at table with your brothers?" "Most times," John answered in a flat voice, "but tonight Lady Stark thought it might give insult to the royal family to see the bastard among them." "I see." His uncle glanced over his shoulder at the raised table at the far end of the hall. "My brother does not seem very festive tonight." John had noticed that too. A bastard had to learn to notice things, to read the truth that people hid behind their eyes. His father was observing all the courtesies, but there was a tightness in him that John had seldom seen before. He said little, looking out over the hall with hooded eyes, seeing nothing. Two seats away, the king had been drinking heavily all night. His broad face was flushed behind his great black beard. He made many a toast, laughed loudly at every jest, and attacked each dish like a starving man. But beside him, the queen seemed as cold as an ice sculpture. "The queen is angry too," John told his uncle in a low, quiet voice. "Father took the king down to the crypts this afternoon. The queen didn't want him to go." Benjamin gave John a careful, measuring look. "You don't miss much, do you, John? We could use a man like you on the wall." John swelled with pride. "Rob is a stronger lance than I am, but I am the better sword, and Holland says I sit a horse as well as anyone in the castle. Notable achievements." "Take me with you when you go back to the wall," John said in a sudden rush. "Father will give me leave to go if you ask him. I know he will." Uncle Benjamin studied his face carefully. "The wall is a hard place for a boy, John." "I'm almost a man grown," John protested. "I will turn 15 on my next name day, and Maester Lewin's bastards grow up faster than other children." "Well, that's true enough," Benjamin said with a downward twist of his mouth. He took John's cup from the table, filled it fresh from a nearby pitcher, and drank down a long swallow. "Darin Targaryen was only 14 when he conquered Dorne," John said. "The young dragon was one of his heroes." "A conquest that lasted a summer," his uncle pointed out. "Your boy king lost 10,000 men taking the place. Another 50 trying to hold it. Someone should have told him that war isn't a game." He took another sip of wine. "Also," he said, wiping his mouth. Daeron Targaryen was only 18 when he died. Or have you forgotten that part?
I forget nothing, John boasted. The wine was making him bold. He tried to sit very straight to make himself seem taller. I want to serve in the night's watch, uncle. He had thought on it long and hard, lying abed at night, while his brother slept around him. Rob would some day inherit Winterfell, would command great armies as the Warden of the North. Bran and Rickon would be Rob's bannermen and rule Holdfast in his name. His sisters, Arya and Sansa, would marry the heirs of other great houses and go south as mistress of castles of their own. But what place could a bastard hope to earn?
You don't know what you're asking, John. The Night's Watch is a sworn brotherhood. We have no families. None of us will ever father sons. Our wife is duty. Our mistress is honour.
A bastard can have honour too, John said. I'm ready to swear your oath.
You're a boy of 14, Benjen said. Not a man, not yet. Until you have known a woman, you cannot understand what you would be giving up.
I don't care about that, John said hotly.
You might, if you knew what it meant, Benjen said. If you knew what the oath would cost you, you might be less eager to pay the price, son.
John felt anger rise inside him.
I am not your son.
Benjen Stark stood up.
More's a pity, put a hand on John's shoulders. Come back to me after you've fathered a few bastards of your own, and we'll see how you feel.
John trembled. I will never father a bastard, he said carefully.
Never.
He spat it out like venom. Suddenly he realized that the table had fallen silent. They were all looking at him. He felt the tears begin to well behind his eyes. He pushed himself to his feet. I must be excused, he said with the last of his dignity. He whirled and bolted before they could see him cry. He must have drunk more wine than he had realized. He got his feet tangled onto him as he tried to leave, and he lurched sideways into a serving girl and sent a flagon of spiced wine crashing to the floor. Laughter boomed all around him, and John felt hot tears on his cheeks. Someone tried to steady him. He wrenched free of their grip and ran, half blind, for the door. Ghost followed close at his heels, out into the night. The yard was quiet and empty. A lone sentry stood high on the battlements of the inner wall, his cloak pulled tight around him against the cold. He looked bored and miserable as he huddled there alone, but John would have traded places with him in an instant. Otherwise the castle was dark and deserted. John had seen an abandoned holdfast once, a drear place, where nothing moved but the wind, and the stones kept silent about whatever people had lived there. Winterfell reminded him of that tonight. The sounds of music and song spilled through the open windows behind him. They were the last things John wanted to hear. He wiped away his tears on the sleeve of his shirt, furious that he had let them fall, and started to go.
Boy,
a voice called out to him. John turned. Tyrion Lannister was sitting on the ledge above the door to the great hall, looking for all the world like a gargoyle. The dwarf grinned down at him.
Is that animal a wolf?
A direwolf, John said. His name is Ghost. He stared up at the little man, his disappointment suddenly forgotten.
What are you doing up there? Why aren't you at the feast? Too hot, too noisy, and I drunk too much wine, the dwarf told him. I learned long ago that's considered rude to vomit on your brother. Might I have a closer look at your wolf?
John hesitated, then nodded slowly. Can you climb down, or shall I bring a ladder?
Oh, bleed that, the little man said.
He pushed himself off the ledge into empty air. John gasped, then watched with awe as Tyrion Lannister spun around in a tight ball, landed lightly on his hands, then vaulted backward onto his legs. Ghost backed away from him uncertainly. The dwarf dusted himself off and laughed.
I believe I've frightened your wolf. My apologies.
He's not scared, John said. He knelt and called out, Ghost, come here, come on. That's it. The wolf pup padded closer and nuzzled at John's face, but he kept a wary eye on Tyrion Lannister
and when the dwarf reached out to pet him, he drew back and bared his fangs in a silent snarl. "Shy, isn't he?" Lannister observed. "Sit, ghost," John commanded. "That's it, keep still."